Hi, this is Bobby Cobb, and I want to welcome you to this special edition of Enter the Zone. How to gain deep rapport with your unconscious mind and be able to access your personal power states easily, effortlessly, and by design. In the 1980s, during the time Gordon Gekko was telling us that greed was good, there was an enormous amount of scientific research that was being conducted on what is happiness. What has to happen mentally inside of each one of us in order for us to feel happy? One of the leading researchers of the day, who had an incredibly complicated name, his name was Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And yes, I know I just butchered that pronunciation. He was a leading researcher in mental states and the cause of happiness. And one of the things that he found out is that human beings are most happy at a time when we enter what is commonly called today the zone. That is a state of mind where we are so enjoying what we're doing that we literally begin to transcend awareness. We lose track of time. Our concentration is completely focused on the task at hand. Any worries or other outside stresses or strain just seem to melt away. It is though we have a childlike fixation, a total concentration, complete absorption on this moment in time. We are literally living in the now. Now, based on this research, he published a very popular series of books, almost every one of which had flow in the title, which was his way of describing what it was like to enter the zone. And they were very popular, bestsellers. Every one of them was on the New York Times bestseller list. The problem was, he was from academia, which means there was an enormous amount of very good research in everything that he was telling us about. It was very scientifically studied. There was a lot of experiments and surveys backing up factually all the claims that he made in the book. People were fascinated by the books. The problem was he did not have a strategy, didn't tell us a strategy for how to actually enter the zone. And one of the things that I commonly find in my peak performance coaching practice as well as my hypnotherapy practice is people have the experience, we all have the experience of having been in flow, having been in the zone, where whatever it was that we were doing was easy, if it was effortless, it was fun, it was though time stood still, but we don't know how to get into that zone. It's something that tends to happen accidentally. It's a pleasant surprise when it does, we enjoy it when it does, but there are other times in our lives when the exact opposite is happening, where we're going to go into a big meeting, or we're going to give a big presentation, or we've got an interview coming up, or we're going out on a first date, or we're at an anniversary, or we're trying to spend quality time with our kids, and the exact opposite is happening. We cannot concentrate on the task at hand. We can't focus. We've got so much noise, so many distractions, so many interactions and memories from the day that are crowding out our consciousness that we literally are unable in that moment to be present. And if you followed my work at all, you'll know one of my favorite sayings, and yes, I recognize that I have many of them, but it helps you remember. One of my favorite sayings is that the good things in our life happen to us one of two ways, either accidentally or on purpose. And if being able to have access to these flow states, to be able to be mentally present, to exclusively focus your energy and attention on a task at hand, and be in that frame of mind, that state of mind, where you know you can perform, you can be in the zone, is something that's important to you, I'm going to suggest it's not something that you want to leave open to chance. In fact, an enormous amount of the work that I do working with individuals is focused on this very task. So I thought it would make sense as the way of introduction to some of the stuff that we do on this particular website to give you this audio, which contains a series of exercises that you can do to condition your mind so that you too will be able to enter the zone at will, by design, on purpose. So let's get started, shall we? So step number one in the process of being able to access your flow states is to, number one, simply realize that they're there. And we've all experienced them before. They simply are those times when you're so engrossed in what you're doing, you're having really such a good and such an effortless time that you don't even notice that time is passing you by. For many people, this is how we develop our hobbies. For some, it's playing a certain sport. For other, it might be doing a craft or a puzzle or a crossword. For other, it's being with families or friends or a loved one. It is that state of mind where time stands still, where you suddenly look up and notice you've been doing your activity for 3 hours, but in conscious time, it felt as though it was 15 minutes. When you've experienced that moment, you've been in a flow state. Now, many of us have experienced the exact opposite of this. This is what's commonly defined as a phobia, where the mere thought of getting in front of a room and speaking in public or getting on an airplane or into an elevator causes you to enter a complete state of panic, where you are extremely unresourceful, very much out of flow, where minutes seem like hours. So here are two ends of a spectrum. And in between, obviously, there's lots of little mini distinctions that we could be making all along the way. For example, the idea of going in for a sales presentation for a salesperson may be something that causes a certain amount of anxiety. Many actors, before they get up on stage, report that they always still have butterflies, even though they've given the same performance over and over again. Yul Brynner tells the story of having done The King and I over 1,000 times, but still getting so nervous before every presentation, before every performance, that he literally had to go to the bathroom and lose his lunch. So imagine if you had the ability to dial in these peak performance states, these flow states, and do it on command, by design, strategically, anytime that you want to. Think about how more easy and effortless and fun your life would be. Well, that is the exact purpose of this audio series. So if that's a skill you'd like to develop, you are absolutely in the right place. So let's begin our exploration of being able to access these flow states of mind first by noticing our current state of mind. And I want to introduce you to an idea called state-dependent learning. And the easiest way to get our mind around the idea of state-dependent learning is through metaphor, through an analogy. And the analogy that I like to use is that of a mental mansion. Imagine that your mind is a giant mansion filled with lots of rooms. And in each one of those rooms lies a specific state of mind. As you go down the hallway, there's doors on each side. And as you open one door, that's your happy room. And another door may be your sad room. And another one may be your excited room. And another one is your focused room. And there's one for romance, one for playfulness, and another one for compassion. And stored inside of each one of these rooms are the memories from your life of every time that you have experienced those specific states of mind. So in your happiness room, there are thoughts and ideas and videos and mental images of every time in your life that you've been truly happy. And you can easily understand, if we think metaphorically, that if you were not feeling happy right now and you wanted to feel happy, what would be the easiest way to do it? Going into that mental room in your mind where all of those happy memories are stored, and surrounding yourself by everything in your life that has made you happy. In fact, my guess is for many of you, you can hardly listen to me describing that without accessing some of those memories in your mind and feeling a little bit happier now, aren't you? The mind is a wonderful thing. Now, we like that image, that idea, but we do have other rooms in our mind. We have a depressed area of our mind where all those things are stored that can fire off depression in our mind easily and effortlessly and take us from a very good mood to a very blue mood, literally at the snap of a finger. And for too many of us, it is almost as though we don't know what door is which. We haphazardly go from one room to another, not on purpose, but accidentally, and suddenly find ourselves in that depression room. There will be something that triggers that experience in us, and suddenly, unconsciously, things are being fired off without any control on our part. Now, there is a school of thought in psychology that says emotions are neither good or bad, they just are. In fact, many teachers have pointed out that anger and sadness and depression and other negative emotions can be very good teachers for us from time to time. I prefer to think of these different states of mind as being either useful or not useful based on the outcomes that you're looking to achieve at any given point in time. For example, if the outcome that you're looking to achieve is quality time with someone very important to you, your lover, your children, your grandchildren, or a close friend, and the room that you suddenly find yourself in is the anxious about whether or not you're going to be able to hit your sales quota room, that's probably not a very useful state for you to be in that moment in time. Or if you have a big presentation to give and you're finding yourself in your depressed room, you're probably going to find that it's difficult to access your elegance, your eloquence, your peak performance states. The problem is they're simply not available in that room. Therefore, one of the keys to peak performance in anything, getting ready for a meeting, giving a good presentation, being present with your spouse or your kids, or learning, is being able to access the right state of mind for that job at the right time. People focus on happiness and being happy, and that's not necessarily the right state of mind to do everything. For example, if you've got a test coming up or a big interview, and you know that you're going to be feeling pressure in that meeting, doesn't it make sense? Wouldn't it be beneficial to be able to access that pressure, to acknowledge it, and to welcome it and actually use it in your preparation? Why is that? Well, if you know that you're going to feel pressure the moment that you enter the boardroom or the exam room or the boss's office or wherever the meeting's going to happen to take place, if you prepare and store your preparation in that mental state, you're still going to have access to all of those tools in that situation. And better yet, in fact, wouldn't it be even better to learn to relax with that pressure and learn to relax in such a way that you still have access to the information even when you're under pressure? And this was exactly the beneficial side effect of the research that was done in the 80s that resulted in all of those books around flow. In fact, they discovered an 8-point plan to be able to access not only what makes people happy, but as a pleasant side effect, actually increases our effectiveness. And this is true whether you're a salesman or a chef or a parent or a shepherd. The same keys are always present when you are in the zone. So here are some of the keys that they discovered to be able to enter that flow state on purpose and by design to be able to gain access to these resources when you need them. Number one is a clear outcome. Human beings are goal-seeking organisms. Without a clear target, even the simplest of pursuits, a game or a puzzle, very quickly become boring. Why? Because we're not challenged. Clear goals and challenges stimulate our unconscious mind. This is the very reason that we want to clear things out so that we can work on this exercise. So as you go through this audio, think about what's the outcome that you would like to see as a result of completing whatever task that you might have in mind. Key number two that they discovered was exclusivity of focus. And to the extent that you have all of your focus and all of your attention on the task at hand, everything that could or would derail the process simply melts away. It actually can no longer occur. If we leave attention room open for fear or doubt, that is by necessity part of your mind, part of your mental energy, and it's being directed toward activities that could potentially sabotage your behavior. Wherever your attention goes, your psychic and psychological energy flows as well. Think of it like a computer, your mental bandwidth. If you're leaving room open for that, then part of the subsystems can go out and find sabotaging behavior. This is why, even with the best of intentions and the best laid plans, we sometimes fail. because we are unintentionally and inadvertently accessing the wrong part of our mind, the wrong mental state, the wrong mental room, and the result of all of that is failure. But with exclusivity of focus, when we are in that right mental state, we have complete exclusivity of our focus. Therefore, there simply is no room, no bandwidth for anything that could be an obstacle to ever even occur. Now, what the researchers noticed when you had these two things, the clear outcome and the exclusivity of focus, one of the things that you would get, which are the next two stages, were practically really just a pleasant side effect. Number one, you lose your sense of self. You're so engrossed that the activity that you're doing feels completely effortless, almost otherworldly. Secondly, you lose your sense of time. We talked about that before as a way of recognizing those times when we have coincidentally or accidentally found ourselves in a flow state. That is also one of the ways that we can notice when we are in a flow state, when we're doing it on purpose, strategically, by design. In fact, we can use these two side effects to really calibrate our unconscious mind and notice that we're in the right place. If you are self-aware, if you have a very precise sense of time, a realization of time at that moment, then you're probably not in a state of pure flow. So those are the first four things of the eight: a clear outcome, exclusivity of focus, loss of self, and loss of sense of time. The fifth state of flow is instant feedback, knowing that whether we're on the path or off the path, being able to tell if we're on track or not. Next, the sixth state, and really the primary purpose that I put this whole audio together, is unleashing our ability to tap into intrinsic motivation. So what is intrinsic motivation? That's a motivation, a joy of doing something and unleashing an internal drive that allows us to be motivated to do and get joy from doing even the simplest of tasks simply for the joy of doing it. As opposed to extrinsic motivation, which is outside pressure that's forcing us to do things, deadlines that have been placed on us by others that we're being forced to meet, which the result of which is causing an enormous amount of additional stress in our lives. So one of the real powers of being able to access these flow states on purpose, by design, is being able to unleash our naturally occurring but all too often dormant intrinsic motivation to get things done. The final two things that allow you to get into and stay in a perfect flow state is number seven, having perceived control. When we feel in control, intrinsic motivation naturally tends to climb. If we feel out of control, our motivation declines. For example, think about being at a traffic light, and there are some people who believe that they have the ability to control the traffic lights merely by the power of their mind. Now, other people think that that's a ridiculous idea, and that traffic lights are on timers, they're completely random, there's nothing that we can do to make them turn even quicker. If you imagine these two people sitting at a traffic light, who is going to try more things in an effort to change that traffic light? Now, regardless of whether you believe or not that people can control traffic lights with their mind, it's easy to see the person who thinks that it's completely random is going to try nothing at all. They're not going to spend any psychic energy on that. The same thing is true for other tasks where we do have a certain amount of control. To the degree that we feel out of control, the less flexible we're going to be in our thought, the fewer things that we're going to try, the quicker that we're going to give up. And the final key is the ability to mix your skill level with the task that you have at hand. In other words, working on the chunk size of that particular task so it is something that you can accomplish. For example, if you've never played a piano before, you wouldn't probably want to start with a Bach concerto. Odds of you being able to complete that are pretty remote. And the opposite of that is also true. If the task at hand is too simple, then the result is likely to be boredom. So the eighth key is being able to control your chunk size, or as David Allen, who wrote Getting Things Done, likes to put it, controlling what's next. And make sure that it is within your skill level, but still represents a challenge, therefore can absorb your attention, thereby helping to keep you in flow. If you think about it, there's virtually no time in your day that it wouldn't be helpful to be able to access power states. I mean, you could think about it from important meetings, whether it's a sales meeting or an interview or an annual review, or you're teaching somebody something, or you're in a relationship and you're sitting down and meeting with whoever that loved one is. If you're looking to learn something, there's a concept today called accelerated learning, which I really prefer to think of as natural learning. Our brains are sponges. The problem is many of the ways that we've been taught to learn put unnatural obstacles in our path and actually inhibit our learning. Once we get into the flow state, those obstacles are removed and we can be a sponge just like we were when we were little kids. So let's do a little exercise and look at how easily we can access the right state of mind and show you how easy it is to change that state of mind. So what I'd like you to do is simply think of a person or a situation that you do not like. Either a person that kind of grates on you a little bit, or a particular situation that drives you crazy or is frustrating to you. And just hold on to that thought for a second. Now, notice how you feel. And allow those thoughts to just fade away. And now bring your attention to someone or something that you really like or truly love. And now notice how you're feeling in that particular situation and really think about it. Now take a second to go back and forth between the two and just notice the difference between how you feel and what you experienced during the two parts of that drill. When I do this in live events, it's not unusual, and you may have experienced it as well, to have a total shift where that first experience you had a sense of tension, but as soon as you shift your attention over to something that you like or love, you immediately enter a state of restful relaxation. And this is a very common experience. When we think of things that we don't like, we tend to feel tense. We tend to feel a lot more stress, even angry or frustrated. But when we think of things that we like, we feel calm and relaxed. And the cool thing is, what you just did was switch from one to another on a moment's notice. Now, the fact that we have the ability to do this is probably not news to anyone. These are baby steps. However, realize this. It is a biological, physiological fact that the longest time an emotion can exist in our body is 90 seconds. There are neurochemically transmitted hormones, and the length of time that it takes from the moment that they are injected to the time that they're completely flushed is 90 seconds. If we have an emotion or a state that lasts longer than 90 seconds, it's because we're recreating it. And this, again, is a biological scientific fact. Now, obviously, we've all experienced times where an emotion has lasted longer than 90 seconds, in some cases, a whole lot longer than 90 seconds. This just tells us that we're very good at allowing these emotions to continue. And the cool thing is, we now can realize that this gives us an enormous amount of freedom to be able to change and to be able to keep the change. So now this does cause some people to wonder, well, if that's the case, why can't we quickly, like during an exam or an interview, get out of these states and move into something that would be more resourceful, more powerful, more useful? How come it feels like it's so hard to do when you're nervous or frustrated? Well, in that case, one of two things is happening. Number one, we may have over-conditioned our neurology, our nervous system, our physiology to that negative state. In other words, as soon as we enter a certain environment, we've been conditioned to feel non-resourceful states of mind. We've been conditioned to feel bad, and we've conditioned it so well that we just automatically start feeling bad on cue. We start feeling bad automatically. Now, we do that with good feelings as well. And you may be able to think of a time that you went on vacation and there was a certain scent or a certain piece of music or a certain food that was ever present during that vacation. And you came back to your home and months later you're walking along and you hear that piece of music again, or you smell that particular smell, and suddenly you're transported right back to those happy memories of being on vacation. It works both ways. The challenge is, all too often, we're not in control of it. They're being controlled by unconscious processes outside of our conscious mind, so these are occurring accidentally rather than on purpose. And that's exactly what we want to change. So how does it happen? Well, let's stay with the example of vacation and the certain piece of music. When you're on vacation, you're practicing a certain emotion. You're in a certain state of mind. And that particular piece of music or that type of music became a trigger for that. A lot of times when we fail to get into the emotional state that we wish we could be in, it's because we've spent weeks or even months leading up to the event, practicing certain mental states, the wrong mental states. It could be even something as seemingly benign as thinking, oh my goodness, I've got this interview coming up. I hope I don't get nervous. I hope I don't get nervous. And what are we doing? We're practicing being nervous and we're setting off the trigger. So in that case, we're really doing three different things. Number one, first, we are rehearsing that emotion over and over again. Second, we're actually priming that state of mind so that it'll be triggered. And third, by going through that mental rehearsal, we're strengthening and setting those mental triggers so they fire off at exactly the wrong time. We're conditioning ourselves to re-experience the same mistakes that we've made in the past, because in the analogy of our mansion, we're in the room where those things happen, surrounded by all of those experiences that we've done in the past. So it's virtually impossible not to fire that off. So the first reason that people fail is they've over-conditioned the wrong mental state. The second reason they fail is that they have not significantly conditioned, sufficiently conditioned, the powerful state of mind that we want to be in, which means as soon as the pressure comes in, that state of mind is going to collapse. Why? We're thinking too much. We're overreacting. We're not in a natural state. We're not in flow. We have not fully integrated that state into our conscious mind, meaning that state of mind, that sense of flow, is not natural enough for us. It's not automatic enough that it stays in place for the duration that we need it to be there. These are two simple reasons that people cannot enter the flow state as easy as they'd like to be able to. Either they've hyperconditioned the negative state, or they've underconditioned the flow state. But this is actually very good news for us. In fact, what we're going to be doing through the rest of this audio is showing you exactly how to overcome these two problems with a simple exercise. If you've ever studied anything about the elite fighting forces, the military, the Navy SEALs, or the Green Beret, one of the sayings that they're fond of is you will always devolve to your level of training. This is why even in times of peace, these guys are always drilling various scenarios over and over and over again. So they're developing the muscle memory. They're integrating their skills into the neurology so that their results are completely automatic. This is the heart of what allows flow states to exist. If the first time you're ever trying to get into a flow state is 5 minutes before your annual review, good luck. I mean, you really have got no chance of becoming conditioned in that amount of time. Obviously, you're better to do that than not to do that, but that's not really the strategy to get it fully integrated into your system. The more time that you spend preparing, the more time that you spend conditioning these states, the easier it's going to be for you to trigger it on demand, and the easier it's going to be for you to maintain it during the whole course of that meeting or task, whatever it is that you're looking to do. So how do we actually go about conditioning ourselves to be able to access flow states? Let's do another little exercise. And what I'd like you to do in this exercise is take your attention to your right thumb. You can look down at it. You can touch it. Just become aware that it's there and become aware of the sensations in your thumb. Now, become aware of your left thumb. And notice the difference of the sensations in the two of those. Which one's different from the other? Now, probably it's very easy for you to call attention to your thumb, and it's very easy to shift from one to the other, and it's very easy to notice the distinction between the two. Now, let's turn our attention to our knee. Now, probably until I brought it up, you didn't really have any attention focused on your knee. Why? Because your attention, if you were doing the exercise properly, was pretty much absorbed in your thumbs. But as soon as I bring it up, suddenly your attention, your psychic bandwidth, suddenly goes to your knee. Now, many people, unless you've got a sore knee that's causing you a little bit of pain, probably don't have as keen of sensory acuity about their knees as they do about their thumb. Now, this isn't true if you do have sore knees. You may have hyper acuity around that. But we all have a certain amount of acuity around our hands. Why? Because we're using them all day, every day. And we're making very refined movements, and a lot of our sense of touch is picked up through our hands So they tend to be a little bit more exposed to the elements. Therefore, we've got a little bit more sensation geared around them. Now, next, I'd like you to focus your attention on your fourth toe, the one next to your pinky toe. What would be your ring toe if it was on your hand? And just notice how difficult it is to become individually aware of that toe. Now, again, if it's broken or stubbed or you've got a blister, it's probably easy to call attention to that toe. But if you don't, for most people, that's a difficult thing for us really to focus our attention on and really get a keen sensory awareness. We probably are having to move it around quite a bit and scrunch our toes up in our shoes if we're wearing any. If we're not wearing any, we can look down and see our toes. Or if you're wearing some sort of a sandal, you can look down and it's a little bit easier that way. But we don't have the mental muscle memory of accessing the sensation of that toe on a regular basis. We don't have that habit. Now, if that toe were to break, or if it were to have a bad blister on it, suddenly we're going to become constantly and keenly aware of everything that's going on in that toe, but it's not a normal place that we put our attention. Now, if we were to spend a few minutes every day focusing our attention on that toe, at the end of a month, we'd be able to do it pretty easily, pretty effortlessly. We would have developed that skills. We would have built our mental superhighway, and we'd be able to access that without very much trouble at all. But being able to develop sensory acuity around our feet is not of interest to most of us. So let's take a look at how we can use this. Let's look at some specific exercise that we can develop these skills to be able to access flow states easily and effortlessly anytime that we want to do it. So you'll recall the first couple of steps. We want to begin with a very clear outcome, a very clear idea of what it is that we want to achieve. Next, we want to be able to obtain exclusive focus on the appropriate task or tasks that we've got to complete in order to be able to achieve that outcome. So let's do an exercise. This is not an appropriate exercise to do while you're driving, and presuming you're not driving now, just close your eyes. Clear your mind. Allow it to become quiet. Breathe deeply. Clear your mind. Have no thought. And now, notice how quiet and clear your mind is. How well were you able to clear everything? If you're like most people, the second that you breathed out, you might have gotten a little bit more calm, but odds are good, as your body was getting calm, your mind may very well have been getting even more and more active. The mere fact that I tell you to clear your mind, or that you want to clear your mind, doesn't mean that it's going to get any clearer. You might be able to clear it. And if you're in the habit of meditating on a regular basis, maybe you were able to get that fairly clear. But for most people, that's going to take some effort. And there are times that you'd like to be able to quiet your mind, and you know that you would benefit from having a quiet mind. But if you just sit there and relax and think to yourself, clear my mind, you may find it difficult to do. In fact, actually, if you don't have meditation experience, there's a very good likelihood that you actually may get fidgety as you're attempting to do that. Not a good strategy. Now, instead, let's take that natural tendency to get fidgety and see how we can use that in an exercise to clear our mind. So what I'd like you to do is hold your hands straight out in front of you, elbows locked, so your hands are 2.5-3 feet in front of you, depending on how long your arms are, and clap your hands together and rub them together very vigorously. Feel the energy as you're rubbing those hands together starting to heat up, and feel the power of those hands and just rub them together and feel the heat continue to grow. Now what I'd like you to do is stick your hands out in front of you again and just focus on that space in between your hands. And imagine that you have two big magnetic plates in each palm. And just notice, as you think about that, what's happening in between your hands. Focus your attention, your energy, your imagination, and feel the power of your magnetic personality as it pulls those hands together. Focus your energy and attention there. Don't resist, don't assist. Just feel that power pulling it together. Absorb your attention. And now notice, how calm is your mind in this moment? As you continue to focus your mind on that space between your hands, you'll notice that it's easier to calm your mind. In fact, many of you don't even need to calm your mind because your attention has been so thoroughly and fully absorbed and your mind is calm. This simple activity helps you relax your mind. And the reason that it does that is that we have a whole life full of experiences at using physical activities, tasks like this, to absorb our attention. Now, the final thing to notice is all of the conflicting thoughts have disappeared. You're naturally curious about what's going to happen next. And as you scan, you'll notice that you are calmer, more aware, more peaceful, and the quality of your attention has heightened significantly. Now, with this exercise, you've probably already realized, at least on some level, that getting into flow, getting into the zone, is going to be significantly easier from this place. What you've done is created a state of highly refined focus that can now be used to access those flow states on purpose by design. We can get in those states that are lying dormant in our unconscious mind through this 5-step process. So, number one, we want to have a clear goal in mind. In fact, what I'd like you to do is think of a specific situation during which you'd like to be able to easily and effortlessly slip into the zone. That could be any circumstance that you want. It could be sports. It could be something at work. It could be the ability to simply sit and focus. It could be a learning situation if you're trying to pick up a new skill. For the purposes of this exercise, though, simply get one outcome that you'd like to achieve and make it very, very clear, a well-formed outcome. Now, frame the goal and think about how would you have to be and how would you have to feel in order to be able to achieve that outcome, the one that you're looking for. And as you think about what you'd have to be and how you'd have to feel, what's the label that you would put onto that particular end state of mind? What's the label that you would give that end state energy? Now, hold on to that idea, that thought, and do your magnetic magic hand exercise. Open your mind. Notice an unconscious subtlety just beginning to rise. As with that clean, energetic mind, with that exclusive focus, you think of the label that you've put on that end state energy. And now end this part of the exercise back at the place that we feel that sense of peace, that calm state of restful alertness. Open your mind using the focus exercise. Now, in this space, when all of our attention is shifted to one place, we are transcendent. You are in that flow state. It is a humbling and a wonderful place of being. That mansion that you're about to build is built on this very solid foundation. Now, the next step is called emotional priming. And the easiest way to think of it is the same way that you would think about priming a pump. And the easiest way to prime an emotion is to ask yourself a question. If happiness is the end state energy that you're looking for, ask yourself, how does it feel to be happy? How do I feel when I am happy? Now, obviously, if you're looking for confidence or you're looking for something else, you'd want to substitute those things there. But the key is you're staying in that calm place of restful alertness. You're not reaching for the answer. You're not pushing to try to make anything happen. But rather, you're staying centered, you're staying calm and peaceful, and you're just allowing yourself to go on that exploration. Taking that supercomputer that is your mind and doing a Google search, something that's easy and effortless. No stress, no strain. You're not trying to pull anything forward. You're not trying to summon anything, but rather simply allow that event to come into your mind. Think of a time when you are happy or you are confident or whatever that end state energy is for you. And just allow your attention to be drawn to that memory, just as it's drawn together in the magnetic hands. You're not trying to make yourself feel anything. Rather, just let the ideas come up. And throughout all of these stages, just ask yourself, how do I feel when I'm happy? Or how do I feel when I'm confident? Or how do I feel whatever your end state energy happens to be. And the more that you experience this now, the more the later steps will make sense. Because once again, you are building a very solid foundation. And just notice as you're doing this exercise that you are transcending space, time, and obstacles. The more you surrender to the experience, the more that you accept it, the more powerful it becomes. Just allow it to happen. You're developing a relationship with your unconscious mind. And that is where the better you comes from. Now, from this state of transcendence, the next step is mental rehearsal. Run through what you want to have happen and how you see it happened, and maintain the emotion and the end state energy as you watch the events that you would like to have happen unfold. Have those events trigger deeper and deeper states, so that as you're rehearsing the events, you're now anchoring those events to what's going to be happening. Get very specific. If you know certain things that are going to happen, for example, if you're imagining an annual review and you know what your boss's office looks like and you know some of his or her idiosyncrasies And you know the way he or she tends to interact with you when you come in. Build those things into your sequence. Use them as anchors to take you deeper and deeper into the zone. Remember, clarity brings you power. You can start with small, simple baby steps and then add layers of complexity and layers of effectiveness. Making sure as you do this mental rehearsal that you're staying in the zone from start to finish, from learning to mastering. And the entire time you're there, maintaining that end emotional state, clear on your outcome. Once you have completed the rehearsal, then just stay there for a second. Wallow in that end state. Glory in it. Get the feeling of it. Anchor it to your being. Notice the subtle little differences as you did when we did the earlier exercise. And then if you're ready to, off to do your task. And if your unconscious mind tells you that you're falling out of the zone, know that you can do this exercise again, even more quickly and even more easily to re-access this end state energy. This is a habit. You're conditioning your unconscious mind to be able to access this state of flow, this feeling of being in the zone anytime that you want to, strategically, on purpose, and by design. It truly is my hope that our paths cross again soon and often. And I'd like to remind you that everything that you're consciously aware of that you desire is awaiting you at your next evolution. I'm thrilled to have been a part of this one. Until next time, this has been Bobby Cobb. Bye-bye for now.